Station number 11729, Rail 2.
Mr. Patience, Rail 2?
Yes, like Admiral Burnett and Cola Inlet, Boxing Day, or before Boxing Day, 1943, we sailed on the 24th from Cola Inlet, and he told us, or he assured us, that if we had anything to eat, eat it now, because we had, there was very big chances that we'd meet heavy units of the German fleet. And that, I think, was very good, letting the ordinary chaps know.
Now, the convoy that the Jervis Bay was protecting, can you say anything about that, as you remember it?
Well, they were all just ordinary merchant ships. One stood out to me in particular. It was the New Zealand Shipping Company's Rangitiki, which my brother had served on just before the war, you know. But other than that, there was just a lot of tankers. We knew there were a lot of tankers in the convoy, and it was a very valuable convoy.
Did you know what was being carried?
Not in the ships themselves, but we assumed there was a lot of food and aircraft parts and what the tankers were carrying, petrol or aviation spirit or whatever they called it, you know.
Was there any other escort apart from the Jervis Bay?
None.
What do you remember about the voyage from Halifax?
Well, uneventful really, up until that fateful afternoon on November the 5th. There was nothing untoward happened, and I went up to the wheel at 4 o'clock, and my relief, the quartermaster who I relieved, said to me, he told me that I'd remind the officer of the watch to bring this bearing to mind at 5 minutes to the hour, such and such a bearing, and this was the bearing that actually that the ship came up on, the Admiral Shea. But as I say, I didn't know. That was the only message I got passed to me. Other than that, there was nothing different apart from the captain being up on the bridge and going from one side to the other, which I thought was, you know, at the time I thought it was a bit funny, but you know, even then there was a sort of air of expectancy knocking about, but nothing, nobody said anything until it all, the alarm bells went, and that was it.
Can you take me through, step by step, what happened when the alarm bells rang?
Well, as the alarm bells went, on the port side of the bridge, the signalman, the chief yeoman of signals, was out there with the captain. Apparently, they were making the challenge to what turned out to be the Admiral Shea. Having got no reply, then they sounded off action stations, and the chief quartermaster came up and relieved me, and I went forward to my own action station, which was the P1 gun on the forecastle. And as the action stations were sounded, then we were ordered to make smoke, or put the smoke floats over the side, which were on both sides of the forecastle head in big canisters like dustbins, and pull the stopper out and chuck them over the side, and then before we knew where it was, the German battleship opened up. The convoy was given the order by flag to disperse, you know. Of course, I didn't know what the signal meant at the time, but that was the signal given, and we knew then, as the convoy went to starboard, we went to port to meet what we thought was a... There was all kinds of speculation what ship it was. Some said it's the Ramillies, and I said, no, it's not. It's I was on one of them, the Rezzo. It's not one of them. By the silhouette, you know, that's all you could see at the time. I thought it was one of the QE class. Queen Elizabeth the Baddam type, you know, and it wasn't one of them. And the next thing we knew, it was a salvo of 11-inch shells come over. So we knew then it was a battleship, but somebody said it was Italian battleship. But they said no. One of my mates said, Italians don't go up firing pair like that. One up, one down, and one in the middle, you know. It was, the gunnery was fantastic. Accuracy. And, of course, we stayed afloat a long time.
Excuse me, the first salvo went where?
Well, when the first salvo went in between the ship, went over the top. And the second one fell about, 50 yards, 100 yards short, which we experienced a lot of high explosive come aboard. And the next one smashed right into the side of the ship.
How frightening was it when... What did the salvo sound like when it was coming?
Oh, terrific. Whistling and... You know, it's not frightening. You don't have time to be frightened. You're not frightened, really, because there's so many things going on. There's so much to do, you know, and it's not saying that you're not frightened. Don't think I'm being brave or anything like that. You are frightened, but at the time you don't have time to think about it. You know, I didn't anyway, but because there were so many things to do.
What do you remember when the shots hit the ship?
Well, I had an idea we was going to be a goner because I knew we couldn't hit back. We was too far away. Our extreme range was only about 10,000 yards because the guns were old. They were 18, 90 odd. And he opened fire on us about 15, 20,000 yards. So I knew there was no way out of it. It was... He did the job that he went there for. He placed the ship in between the battleship and the convoy. And that was his objective. And that's he said that's what he said he would do to the crew when he joined the ship. I never heard this, but that's what you would expect him to do. That was our job, and that was it, just to save the convoy. Some people have said, well, it was suicidal. Well, we know it was suicidal, but how suicidal would it have been if 30 ships would have been destroyed and we'd have run with the convoy? We'd have been cowards, wouldn't we?
What do you remember when the shells hit the ship then?
Well, the shells were coming over to such an extent, you know. I was blown off the forecastle, actually, got injured. And blown onto the well deck down by P2, and I recovered, and the shells were exploding, and somebody said get a fire hose out and try and get in this place where the sick bay was, but one of the chaps went in front of me with a hose, another shell exploded, and I was just left with a bit of the hose in my hand. You know, everything was happening. It was chaotic, really. You know, it was absolute slaughter. There was bodies everywhere, chaps on fire, indescribable. And we got hammered to pieces, really, absolutely hammered to pieces. And ship was... Very, very... Of course, she lasted a long time because we had 10,000 barrels on board that they put in our merchant cruisers to stop them from sinking quick after being torpedoed. I mean, there was a great loss of life in other our merchant cruisers where they'd been torpedoed and sank within about 10 minutes. So they put these barrels in to give them a bit of buoyancy. And it actually cost us a big hammering, really, but... Because only while we was afloat, we were stopping the German battleship from going after the convoy. And he thought we were still firing at him. But it was our own ammunition that was exploding, really, that he was firing on us and setting our ammunition off. But he still thought we was firing at him. But we wasn't. We was outgunned and smashed out within half hour or so. Any firing after that was insignificant, really. As I say, all the stuff that was exploding was our own ammunition. But all the while we was there, we was a threat between him and the convoy, and the convoy got away. It took over 2 hours for the ship to sink, but 2 hours and 40 minutes.
So you were describing what happened to you, and you said you were left with a piece of hosepipe in your
hand. Yeah, well, what happened then, offhand, I can't really remember, but I know there wasn't many of us left alive. And one chap in particular from Hull, he came from Hull, Bill Greenley, by the way. He was a fisherman from Hull. And I said to Bill, come on, it's our last chance. There was only two of us left. He said, I can't swim. I said, well, neither can I. I said, but I'm going over the side. And I went over the side with a life buoy and left Bill on there. And he was the last person that I knew was alive on the Jervis Bay. And she was going down by the stern when I went over, because I hung on as long as I could, in view of the fact that I couldn't swim either. But I took the chance and went over and survived a couple of hours in the water before I got picked up by the only lifeboat that got away. And they took me aboard reluctantly, but because it was full up, and the weather was rushing in. And then out of the blue and came the Stuart Home in the darkness and rescued us.
What was the name of the ship?
The Stuart Home, Swedish ship.
So did this whole man leave the ship, or did he?
No, he went down. He went down with her, Bill. You come in from Hull, you could probably know if he's got some relatives there.
So you were 2 hours in the water?
Yeah, I went in the water about 20 to 8, up our 7, 20 to 8, I went in the water, and I was in the water for about 2 hours, and very cold. Thought I would last the morning, you know, being young and that, I thought, I'll keep afloat the morning with a life jacket. But as the weather worsened and it got colder in November, you can imagine what it's like in the mid-Atlantic, and my hands was all torn here where I'd gone, slid down the rope. You can see the white marks there?
Across your knuckles.
All hanging off them fingers. And that's the only marks that I've got left. That bear them. Well, I've got a couple of scar wounds, but they're the marks there.
How much clothing did you have on?
Just a pair of trousers and a jumper. And unwillingly, I kicked off a new pair of shoes that I was breaking in.
Was the water full of oil?
Can't recall it, really. It was cold, I know, but full of oil. Can't recall it being full of oil. And while floating round, I could hear shrapnel still popping round, you know, where he'd kept on firing quite a long time afterwards. The ship went down. He didn't stop to pick up any survivors. He didn't want to. He had no intention of doing it.
Did you have to force your way onto the lifeboat?
Well, I got hold of the gunnels of the boat, like I said, just come in, and they said, no, we're full up. And they said, oh, come on then. They said, chuck that lifeboat away. And I said, no, I'm not chucking no life. And they dragged me in, lifeboat and all. And but I didn't know any of the fellas, you see. As I say, being new on the ship, I didn't know who was who in the lifeboat or nothing.
Did you know any of the, you didn't know the names of any of the people on the lifeboat?
No, not at that particular time, no.
Do you not know any of them now?
No, not now, no, I can't recall.
What state were they in the lifeboat?
Some of them were pretty grim. I think a couple had died, you know, and they just went over the side. A couple died of exposure that I know of. Names I can't remember, but I didn't know them, you see.
Did any of them have wounds?
The one that I knew was wounded was Slinger Woods. He was badly wounded. I think he had badly wounded in his back, I think. And he was the only one that I remember But he never moaned about it, you know. I was wounded myself, but didn't know the extent of my wounds. I know I'd got shrapnel in my back here and my side, and in the back of my head I had a couple of splinters here, and then my hand, that was the worst part, and of course my face was all burnt, not bad, but it was burnt, all my eyebrows were all singed off, and you can see by the photos, or you haven't seen them, I've got the photos in the paper, you know, taken in Halifax in 1940, where it's all, you could see where my face is burnt and my hands. But
you mean your hand was worse because it was the most painful?
Well, it was in the salt water and all, you see, and didn't realise how bad it was until I got picked up, really.
How did the Swedish ship come?
Well, he stayed in the smokescreen that we laid because he didn't have a good turn of speed, and he was on a small ship, about 5,000 ton, and he was loaded with pig iron, and he couldn't make haste quick enough, so he stayed in the smokescreen, and then he began his search when the battleship, he'd seen the battleship go or heard the firing stopped. He searched around the area of the smokescreen, and he found us. Marvellous. Brilliant, absolutely. They were the Swedish crew, Swedish, all of them. They came down, took us up, lifted us up, and they manned the lifeboat, our lifeboat, and went away looking for survivors, which I think was marvellous. And the weather was worsening all the time. I mean, by the time daylight broke in the morning, it was blowing half a gale. Very, 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 very windy. I'd never lasted out in the morning, which I thought I would have done. Never.
How many survivors do you think the ship picked up?
Well, I thought he picked up the whole 65 at the time. And but I can't be accurate in that respect. Where but all the survivors that I knew were picked up by the steward hall.
Where were you put on the ship?
I was put in the second officer's cabin because being injured.
Did you get any medical treatment?
Well, they gave us the best medical treatment that they had. I think they dressed my hand just with iodine and covered it with a bandage, and of course it was all stuck together when I got in hospital, but they did their best for us. They treated us in the saloon first, laid us on the deck and treated us in the saloon, and then the worst injured, including myself and Slinger Woods and Danny Bain, we were given the officers. They gave up their cabins for us, and forever grateful to the Swedes. Marvellous.
What did you think of the way in which the Admiral Scheer treated the Jarvis Bay? Do you think it was all fair?
Well, I would have thought so if I'd have been on the Scheer. So it's, I thought they would have made some attempt to pick up survivors, but their prey was the convoy. So six of one, half a dozen of the other. If I'd have been on the Scheer, I'd have been on the rampage as well. It's that's what it's all about, isn't it? So them or us.
Was the voyage on the Swedish ship uneventful?
Didn't know much about it, just rolled about and were given back to Halifax, actually. In actual fact, the ship was bound for Oban in Scotland with this pig iron, and the captain made the decision, he went back to Halifax. For what reason, I don't know, but I suppose he's going back there thinking he wouldn't have had so many submarines to encounter going back instead of coming back across the Atlantic, you know.
Were you put in a hospital in Halifax?
Yes, I was in the Campbell Hospital for about 5 weeks, 4 weeks.
What was the name of the hospital?
Camp Hill.
What did you think of the treatment you got there?
First class. Couldn't have been better. Oh, they were marvellous people.
Did it take you long to recover?
Well, as I say, I was in there about a month or 5 weeks, so in actual fact, I was up and about then, as I say, my wounds was, the worst part was my hand, like, you know, it was all bandaged up and that, but the wound on my side and the head, that was, that healed up all right. I got the shrapnel out of that, and I was sort of up and, well, young, fit, raring to go again, like to get out of hospital and get some leave. And of course, I never came back. A lot of the survivors, by the time we was in hospital, had come back to England, but I didn't come back to England. I took my leave in Canada and America, being as I wasn't married or nothing like that. So I chose to spend my leave in Canada and America.
How long was it before you were back on duty with the Navy?
About 2 months. About January, I think it was.
1941.
One, yeah. I joined another armed merchant cruiser then, the Oceania, as a quartermaster.
Was your service with the Oceania eventful?
Not engaging the enemy of any, you know, anything like that. One night we had a scare in the Northern Patrol, which is up the Denmark Straits, you know. There was a object sighted, believed to be a German warship. And they said, they give the order, all guns load with a full charge. I said, well, if this is another German warship, I'm over the stair this time. I did say that, and I'll be quite honest about it, because I wasn't going to go through that lot again. But it turned out to be one of our own armed merchant cruisers, the Montclair.
What period were you serving on the Oceania? Can you remember the dates that you were on the Oceania?
About January 41, I think it was.
Until?
I think it was up till about April, May 1941, when we ran into a bit of trouble off of Iceland, and we had to go to Belfast for a refit.
Trouble with the weather?
No, yes. We ran into a gale of weather, a gale off the coast of Iceland, and we damaged our screws, and we had to go to Belfast for repairs.
What was the next ship you joined then?
Well, I went after the Oceania, I went to Chatham Barracks for a spell, and then I joined a Hunt class destroyer.
Which was that?
The Melbrake.
Melbrake?
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Melbrake. The Melbrake Hunt from Leicestershire, I think it is. They were named after all different hunting.
Yes.
They used to have the old tune going, a hunting we will go.
They played that tune on the ship?
As the ships were going out of harbour, you know, that was the Hunt class destroyers, had this played on a tune, a hunting we will go, a hunting we will go.
What did they play it on? An old fashioned
gramophone? An old fashioned gramophone, or a record of some kind out of there. That's what they played. Oh, yeah, that was played by all Hunt class destroyers leaving harbour.
What duties did the Melbrake undertake whilst you were on her?
Well, we'd done all an assortment of duties, anti-submarine duties in the channel, Malta convoys, escorting ships here and there.
Any incidents that stand out in your mind from Melbrake?
No, only the Malta convoys, which were a bit terrifying, really.
But you said that you were in the Battle of the Barents Sea.
That was on the Beagle. Boxing Day, yeah. That was Boxing Day 1943, yeah. I was on the Beagle then, another destroyer.
What do you remember about that Battle of the Barents Sea?
Not a lot. And not a lot of people could say that they see anything, because it was a blizzard, blinding snowstorm, and a gale of wind. Absolutely terrible conditions. We were screening the Norfolk, and she was the only ship that got hit during that affray with the Scharnhorst.
Did you see the enemy ships?
No, I never saw them, because, as I say, it was a blinding snowstorm, and it was all done by radar, really.
Did you see the Norfolk get hit?
No. We didn't know until afterwards till the Norfolk got hit.
You were telling me that the Beagle broke down in the Battle of the Barents Sea.
Yes, our condensers went, and we were at the mercy of the sea and everything else, and we could hear planes, which we assumed was German planes, looking for survivors from the Scharnhorst. But the mist and the cloud and the snow was so low that they never saw us, luckily, and we were picked up by the and towed into the Faroe Islands by the destroyer, Canadian destroyer, the Athabaskan. And I was very grateful to them, really. And temporary repairs were done to our boiler or the tubes, and we proceeded from there to Greenock in Scotland. First to Scapa and then to Greenock for major repairs.